The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the Idea Guy Morgan. So, Russ, this past weekend, Jessica has had the girls learning CPR.
Okay.
Taking an online course. And one of the situations that they are learning how to deal with reminded her of a story. She said, Joe, you got to share that story Russ told you about when they were at the lake. And I was like, okay, well, I tried. I did my best, but I did not do it any justice. Okay. And so I want you to share the story from the lake. Can you please share that with us.
Okay. I don't know what this has to do with today's podcast at all, but maybe there's a chance encounter that would tie these two things together. Sure. So this summer we're at the lake and we will go to the rope swings from time to time, as all good rednecks will do. And we're there and it's my brother-in-law and I, who he's an orthopedic surgeon, and they have 11 kids. Yes, 11 kids. They're all the same. From same mom and dad, no twins in the group, and our kids, and we go and we do the rope swings. It's fun. It's something we've done for many, many years. Well, we're at the rope swing, Joey, and this older group shows up, and there's a group of like 60-year-olds as well as some 30-year-olds, and you can tell they're from out of town. They've been drinking a little bit lively,
a little inebriated.
They swim over to the rope swing, and the guy in the water is like, "No, I ain't doing that. I will not do that." But the older lady, she's mid-60s somewhere. She's like, "Oh, I'm going to get up on there. Let me do it." And so I'm just like, this is going to be fun, right? This is a chance to teach your kids what not to do when you're older.
You're popping popcorn right now, like getting ready to watch.
So, you know, she climbs up on it, and they've got this long ski rope with a ski handle on it. And then they also have a rope that connects to it that allows you to get it when it's hanging over the water, right? So that's the real dangerous part of this. Really swinging out is no problem. I mean, my 5 and 6-year-olds have done this over time. It's not that hard. It's almost immediately over water, so it's not really dangerous to hit the ground. And you fall into at least 5 foot of water. But if you swing all the way out, you're 12, 15 foot of water.
Sure.
So this lady gets up there, and you can tell she's nervous. But she's kind of like telling the crowd, look, I'm going to do this. This is what I came here to do. I'm going to do this. And, you know, like her daughter, who's like 30, sitting on the boat, she's like, "Mom, you don't have to do that." "No." She's like, "No, I won't do this." And so she looks down at Matt and I, at my brother-in-law, and she goes, "By the way, I do have all my teeth. I just took out this one because I didn't want it to fall out." So she's smiling at us with the hockey grin, you know. I was like, "Oh, man." And so we're telling her, "Hey, look, to be safe, what you want to do is wrap that little rope, kind of go back and forth, the one that holds on to the main rope, and just put it in the ski handle. Don't wrap it over it. Don't wrap it around your hands. Put your hands over it, hold the ski handle, and just swing yourself out. You're fine.
And just let it release.
Just let it release. That way it won't catch you, you know, when you're falling." Joey, she gets up there, and she's pushing 2 and a quarter, 250, you know, this – she's seen her slimmer days, right? This isn't it. She barely, I mean, I don't know if she fell off the tree because she barely hit the water. And it was coming down flat on her belly. She hits the water.
Belly flop.
Belly flop. Now, here's a little key thing that happened. What I noticed is she hit the water. I noticed that that little hand, the little rope that holds onto the handle is tight. I'm talking about like so tight that she goes and takes it underneath the water, which usually it's over the top of the water by about 2 foot when it's just hanging. So she brought it all the way down. So you knew she had to be holding it somehow.
There's some tension.
Yeah. And that thing fires up into the tree. I mean, like 30 foot up in the air, just like, right? So she comes up and it's like, ow, ow. And I'm trying my best, like, I'm being concerned.
Why are you
for
not laughing right now?
Because I'm concerned, right? You know, because she's 60. It's like, man, this was a bad idea. You should not have done this.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you okay? And she's like, ow, ow. I barely fought. And so she's like slowly swimming herself.
Captain Obvious.
Yeah, she's got, thankfully she had a life vest on. She's swimming herself over toward the pontoon. And she's holding up her hand. And she's like, I think I broke my finger. And so I'm like, whoa. And so I look immediately over my brother-in-law, you know, because he's the doctor, right? And like, he looks back at me after looking at her and like shaking his head going, no, she didn't break her finger. She cut it off.
What?
And I'm like,
it's gone.
She's like, you cut it off. Like, how? And so like he swims and like follows her, gets in a boat. Like, I mean, talking about chance encounter, the fact that you cut off your finger and you've got an orthopedic surgeon. But so here's the real, what happened? She somehow wrapped this little small ski rope around like her middle finger. And Joey, from like that middle knuckle, it literally severed that thing. So when all her weight, when she went underneath the water, like the rope literally just, and that's what was all that pressure and that rope goes flying through the trees, like it gone. And my brother-in-law was like, well, good news is, that, you know, I've seen worse. I mean, it's like, well, that's not good. He's like, this doesn't scare me or something like that. I mean, this was just crazy. So I don't know if that's what you, if you were able to show that same, to tell that same story, because I know you were teaching about how to deal with amputees and CPR. But as it pertains to our story today, I think it probably, only way I can tie those two things together is maybe chance encounter.
Yeah. So our guest today is Brian Page, and he had his own chance encounter on an airplane. You're not going to want to miss that story. That's where this whole idea came about of buying or using the Airbnb formula with houses you don't even own to make six figures in 6 months or less.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Well, if you're tired of trading time for money, as we talk about on this show constantly, you're looking for an ideal way to pick your path, this might be one. I mean, he tells how the very first month he started doing this, he was netting all the utilities, rent, all the expenses, $1,600 a month, and that was on one-bedroom apartment, which, as we know, in most rental environments, people are trying to get $300 to $400 a month on a long-term rental. He did 4 to 5 times that. Happened in month one. He started buying multiple of these places and using a different method, maybe not even buying them, that you're going to want to learn from. So this is a really neat story. Let's dive into it with Brian Page.
Dad, do you have to go to work today? If you're tired of having to answer yes to that question, and you're ready to stop trading time for money, join Russ and I on this journey to financial freedom at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
This is the place where you can take control. You can pick your own path and get there faster. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
Welcome into the show. We have Brian Page, the master hacker of the Airbnb formula. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Man, Brian, so people sometimes get on a plane and they sit next to the stallion over here and they're like, oh crap, I got to sit next to this guy.
Come on.
He's big. He's Italian. It looks like he may be sweating through his shirt. I can see his pits. Like, this is bad. Or the people are like, let's make sure I don't have to sit next to that person. But you had an experience on an airplane that changed your life. I want to hear more about it. Tell me about the guy that you met on the airplane.
Sure. I was on a work flight. I was working about 50 hours a week at this job that I particularly didn't like. I had gone back to working for the man, so to speak, after many, many years of being an entrepreneur, essentially never having really worked a traditional job. And so I was hating it. I was trying to figure out how to get out of that job. And so just on a typical work flight, sat down next to this guy. And we started striking up a conversation. I found out that he was extremely wealthy. He was an angel investor, He invested capital in the early stage companies, that kind of thing. And we started talking about what I was up to. And I told him I was renting this little two-bedroom apartment and I had one of the rooms on Airbnb and I was making good money with it. And so he started asking more and more questions about what I was doing. And I couldn't figure out why this guy was so curious. You know, was he going to do Airbnb at his house? I didn't understand. And after talking to him, I said, why are you asking me all these questions about what I'm doing? And he said, well, because I think you're sitting on a gold mine here. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you need more of these properties. And I said, well, duh, yeah, obviously. But I had gone through the whole real estate crash and my credit was in the toilet and I had no money. And I was like, well, I'm not going back into debt and buying properties again. I just don't feel like doing that. And he's like, no, you don't need to own properties. You need to control them. And that one idea was what sparked everything for me.
So what's going through your head when he says you need to control them, not own them?
Well, at first I didn't know what he meant. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, you can either lease properties with permission from the owners to put them on Airbnb and create cash flow from them, or you can partner with the owners where you can essentially share in the revenue that you make. And if you do that, then you can control a whole bunch of properties without having to get big down payments and without having to go get loans and any of that kind of stuff. So I went home from that flight, and within about a week after that, I got my first little one-bedroom standalone apartment a few blocks from where I lived. I put it on Airbnb, and that was like the beginning of everything for me.
All right. So I want to dive into that. But first, you said something during that kind of opening statement that you had gone through the real estate crash and lost everything. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about that.
Okay. So I got into real estate investing right after graduating from college. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I wasn't going to work for someone else. So I was trying all kinds of schemes and businesses, none of which made me any money. But then I learned that real estate, you know, has created more millionaires than any other vehicle. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to become a real estate investor. And I started getting into flipping properties. I had a mentor that taught me how to do it. I flipped over 100 properties and I was doing wholesale deals and I was building, doing construction, spec homes. I mean, I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff and became a millionaire in my 20s doing that and had a huge portfolio. It was going great until around 2007 when everything ground to a halt and I was sitting on a whole bunch of beach property, oceanfront property that I couldn't sell and that I couldn't cash flow. And essentially it sunk everything for me and I walked away from everything. So all my properties were foreclosed around 2007, 2008. And that was the end of it for me. And I really never went back to real estate after that. And I didn't declare bankruptcy, but I was essentially bankrupt. And I was in debt to the tune of $1.3 million after the fact. So IRS liens of 1.3 million. I got that letter. You can imagine what that does to you. So I was a negative millionaire at that point. And so for years after that point, I essentially was a financial fugitive. I was essentially didn't deal with it, didn't know how to deal with it, and was just trying to look for ways to kind of make, just kind of pay the bills for years and years and years. And that was when this conversation happened on the plane.
So, so you took that and obviously you go through those bumps and bruises. It teaches you a lot of lessons along the way. Mm-hmm. But it's a blessing, though, that you were renting out a room in your apartment, if I understand your story right, which mm-hmm. is what allowed you to even have the conversation with the guy on the airplane. Tell us, how did you figure out, like, why did Airbnb of your own, like, you know, spare bedroom even come to existence?
Well, I was looking for cash flow. I knew that I had missed that experience of having cash flow coming into my life on a regular basis without me having to do anything. And I was sick of trading my time for money at my job. So I was looking for cash flow and I knew a quick way to do it would be just to take a spare bedroom and put it on Airbnb. Well, I had the goal of making a few hundred dollars a month with it. I actually made enough to pay for my rent and all my utilities on my place. So I was apartment hacking. And so I was living for free in the place I was in. I was depositing my paychecks that were coming in from work every 2 weeks into my bank account. So I was covering my living expenses, which was awesome. And so I got a little taste of what I had experienced when I was in my 20s, having a portfolio of properties that were paying for my lifestyle. I remember when I was about 27, I told people I was retired. Even though I only had a few houses and I was living, you know, meagerly, I was essentially out of the rat race. So I was looking for another way to get out of the rat race again. And I didn't think Airbnb would be a big thing for me. I just thought, oh, this is great. I found a way to live for free. And it was a place I was renting. It wasn't a place I owned.
Right. So now you're telling this guy on the airplane and he's like, okay, wait a second, Brian. You got a chance to control the real estate, which is so much more valuable. This is what you want to be in. You just need to go and find other properties that you can rent from them, not having to put your own money up, and yet now go on to Airbnb. So tell us about the conversation you had with your neighbor.
Yeah. So after I got home from that experience, having that conversation with the gentleman on the plane, I started looking at rentals. I looked everywhere. I looked in the local paper. I looked on Craigslist. I walked neighborhoods looking for signs. And I basically looked as many properties as I could find. And I would talk to these owners and just tell them my harebrained idea that I don't want to live in the property. I do want to rent it from you, but I don't want to live in it. I want to put it on one of these home sharing sites. And I got some weird reactions, but one lady in particular, elderly lady, she had a little apartment behind her house, separate entrance. And I told her my idea and she didn't even know what Airbnb was, but she said, I'll think about it. She got back to me about a week later and said, okay, let's do this. So I signed a year lease and I furnished the property very cheaply, used furniture, and listed it on Airbnb. And the very first month I made $1,600 after expenses. So $1,600 net. And I could not believe that, because as a real estate investor, when I had a little one bedroom apartment, I made about a tenth of that. So I was making 10 times more. I was making $150, $200 on a place that I owned before, and now I'm making 10 times that with Airbnb. And actually that unit has made me all the way up to $2,100, $2,200 in certain months. So I created a cash flow of roughly $18,000, $20,000 a year on a little one bedroom place behind somebody's house. And so then I thought, okay, what's the next thing to do? I better go find some more of these. And I started finding more and more and started scaling.
Okay, so I want to get into the future of how that all kind of continued to transpire. But before we do, I think one of the mental blocks that I have, and I'm sure other people may be listening and having, is those conversations are pretty awkward, right? Yeah. To go to somebody that's never heard of this and to say, hey, by the way, I want to rent your place, but I don't want to live in it. I want to have these other people come through on this sharing site. So walk through, one, how do you get past that? And two, what are some of those things that people say, that some common objections?
Okay. Well, there are a lot of objections that people have, but they all kind of fell under just a few categories. And as I started meeting with more owners, I met with hundreds of owners now face to face, just talking to them about this. I found they're all pretty much the same objections. And as I learned new ones, I would try to think of ways to answer those objections. So early on, one of the biggest things was, I don't know if I want to do this with you, Brian, because there's going to be too much wear and tear on my property. There's going to be people coming and going, luggage coming and going, all these people staying here. I have no idea. It's not going to be good. Too much wear and tear. So I started thinking about it. And as a previous real estate investor, I knew what it was like to have tenants. So I said, wait a second, there's a big difference between tenants and guests. And so I would say to an owner, after thinking about it, I said, all right, let me give you some scenarios. And I want you to tell me if this is more likely to be a guest or a tenant. So I said, okay, somebody works on their car in the driveway and leaves it on blocks for weeks at a time. Is that going to be a tenant or a guest that's coming in for two nights?
Right, tenant.
Obviously, right? Somebody's going to paint one of the bedrooms a weird color, or put a satellite dish on the roof without permission, or have their dog dig holes in the backyard, you know, over the course of a year. Is that going to be a tenant or a guest?
Yeah,
tenant. Obviously, it's not going to happen with guests. In fact, my guests don't have pets. They're not allowed to smoke in the property. They're only there for a couple of days, 2 or 3 days maximum. And also I'm bringing in a cleaning company to professionally clean between each guest. So I explained to the owner, look, tenants cause problems, guests do not. There's a completely different mentality between the two. And the mentality is tenants act like it's their property. It's my property. I've got it for the next year or two or whatever. And you can't come in here and it's my space and I can do what I want with it. Guests don't have that mentality at all. They're just guests in the property. And they're going to be gone. And so I could explain that to the owners. And I said, look, your property will be held to the highest standards. It'll be cleaner than you've ever seen it before, because if I don't keep it that kind of standard, I'm not going to be able to put guests in here and make money. And so so I have to basically just overcome two things. Owners want to know, are you going to pay them on time without any hassle? And are you going to respect and take care of their property? If you can show them those two things, they're in. Because I was an owner and I am an owner now. And that's the only things I care about generally. Is, are you going to pay and are you going to take care of the property? And I show them that I will. And then there's some other things people, you know, had objections about. Well, what about liability? What if somebody falls and hurts themselves? What if they burn my property to the ground? All these kind of things. And all of that can be handled and covered by insurance. There's insurance that specifically covers short-term rentals now. There's lots of companies that do that. So basically, I have to overcome these objections. But even with that, there's a lot of people that say no, and that's okay. It's just a numbers game. If I see 10 properties on a Saturday, I know that one or two of those people will say yes.
Yeah. It's brilliant, though, that you have found a use where, and now it's so commonplace to do Airbnb. We've mm-hmm. talked about it on the show at length that Joey and I have large families. He has 5 kids. I have 4. We don't travel to a hotel. I mean, that just doesn't fit a family of 6 or 7. And unless you want to spend, $1,500 a night and get the king suite, and he can pay for it. I can't. Like, he makes me work all the time. But you go and find a 2, 3, 4 bedroom house. Mm-hmm. Everybody spreads out, and it's the same price, if not sometimes less, than just a traditional hotel. So it totally makes sense to do this. So you started expanding. Like, talk about mm-hmm. that expansion. How fast and how rapid was that?
Yeah. So what I did is the very next month after, now keep in mind, I had my little bedroom making me money. I now had this one bedroom, had made me $1,600. I didn't know what it was going to do each month thereafter, but it was always profitable every single month. So I went and got another place. And this was a studio. It didn't even have a bedroom, just a little studio. And it was expensive. It was $2,000 a month. That's pretty expensive for most cities. But when I approached that owner, she was thrilled with the idea because she'd been trying to rent that place for 5 months with no luck because it was too pricey for a very small studio. But I told her what I wanted to do, and she thought it was brilliant. She's like, that's amazing. So I leased it from her, and it was already furnished. So I learned, okay, now I need to get furnished properties if I can. So I only look for furnished places after that point. And it was furnished and it had all the utilities included. So I didn't have to worry about any of the utilities. So what I did is I literally took the photos that she had used online and took those photos and posted them on Airbnb and started getting bookings. I blocked out the calendar because I didn't have the keys for a few weeks. And I said, I want to start my lease, 3 weeks from now. Is that okay? She said, that's fine. So I put it on Airbnb and I booked the entire first month with a profit before I ever got keys to the property. So I guaranteed and locked it in that I was going to make money. And so then I went and got another property after that, which was a 2-bedroom. And I got another 1-bedroom. And I just kept stacking these things. Made over $100,000 the first 6 months and over $300,000 the first year with all these properties. And then I got even more creative and I started thinking maybe I could do this without signing leases. And I found out there's a way to do that. You just simply cut the owner in on some of the profits you're making. And you can say to the owner, hey, you're charging $1,500 for this place. What if I can show you how to make $2,000 a month with it, with no extra work on your part at all? All you got to do is let me list it on Airbnb. I'll get it ready. I'll stage it. I'll photograph it. I'll put it on Airbnb, and I will guarantee you your rent, $1,500 minimum. But then anything over that, we'll split it or we'll do some kind of profit sharing. So you're probably going to make closer to $2,000 a month. And I don't know many owners that would say no to that. And it's month to month. So if you don't like the arrangement with me, you can walk. Either one of us can walk with a little bit of notice. And so there's no long-term commitment. Are you in? And owners will be like, heck yeah, I'm in.
Well, and so, it seems like that strategy for you is even less risky because then you're not stuck on a 12-month lease if the property, for whatever reason, wasn't a great rental mm-hmm. on the short-term space.
Yeah, I like leases because it allows me to control the property for a set amount of time and I get all the profit. But partnerships are great if you don't want to sign a lease or you're scared to sign a lease. It's a great way to start in a market without knowing what that market, if you don't know what you can make in your particular town or city, you might want to partner with somebody first. And so it's a very easy way to get in. And it's also a no money down method. Okay. So everybody talks about no money down in real estate. With the leasing option, you have to come up with the first month's rent deposit, a little bit of money to get involved. It's a very small amount of money compared to other real estate methods. But the partnership model means that I'm not giving them a deposit. I'm not giving first month's rent because I'm offering them a service. It's like, Mr. Smith, if you're ready to do this, let's sign the paperwork. And tomorrow I'll be back here. We'll get photos. And we'll get this thing listed. So I'm not offering him any money up front. I'm just offering him a service. So it basically gets you in no money down. You can start making money immediately as soon as it's listed on Airbnb. You start getting bookings and you create cash flow. And that cash flow is as long as you have access and control of that property. So I don't know any other way you can make cash flow that quickly in real estate or outside of real estate.
No, it's brilliant.
Now, so you mentioned how you got started was more right there in your own neck of the woods, your own neighborhood almost. Mm-hmm. Have you now since then expanded outside of your city, your state, so on? Walk us through that.
Yes. I'm mostly, all my properties are here in the Charleston metro area. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, but I just got a property in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's actually a multi-million dollar property that we control through a lease option. So we're leasing it long-term, but we also have the option to buy. So we're going to make a good chunk of money if and when we decide to flip the contract to someone else. And we're also looking at an entire portfolio of properties. We'll look at it more in Arizona, but we're also looking at a portfolio in Florida. So now I'm in multiple states and I have people to help me manage them there. So I don't have to go to Arizona to manage the properties there. And so, yeah, so I'm in different price points, very, very low end all the way to high end multi-million dollar properties. And I'm in multiple states and many of my students are doing the exact same thing. So I got students that are doing multiple countries, which I haven't even tried myself yet. So they have family or they have friends, say in Italy, like this one girl I know I'm thinking of that lives in LA. She's doing deals now in Italy because she knows somebody there. So she's got properties in LA, properties in Italy. So it is possible to do a long distance, but I don't recommend starting there. I recommend starting close to home and learning the business.
Stallion, you got anybody in Italy that I can go hit up?
You know, I need to work on the family connection.
There you go.
You know, in Sicily.
talk to me, Brian, about managing the properties. Because I know, obviously, that's one of the thoughts that come up is, and we've interviewed a few different people that have talked about the short-term rental space. And there's different ways to do that. What is your thought process on managing this thing? Is it Should somebody who gets into this, should they do it themselves initially, or should they immediately find somebody who can manage it? How do they do that?
I recommend they do it themselves at first. So maybe the first listing or two, because you can't teach someone else how to manage all these properties if you don't know what your policies are, if you don't know what your procedures are. You got to learn it. You got to learn the business. There's a curve, a learning curve involved here. But what I found is that once I got to about four or five properties, I was becoming a full-time front desk person. I was basically running my own little distributed hotel. And that's cool if you want to have a job like that, but I didn't. I was like, this is not cool. I'm tired of taking messages at 2 a.m. where somebody's asking for more towels. I mean, it was like I was running a little hotel. So I got to the point where I figured I got to find a way to outsource all this. And thankfully, there are companies, that's all they do now is they take all of that off your plate. They, for a few pennies on the dollar, they'll manage your listings. They'll message the guests. They'll take care of everything virtually. So I came up with a concept called virtual front desk. So just like when you have a hotel, you walk into the hotel, there's somebody at the front desk that takes calls and manages the hotel. You need a virtual front desk. And you don't want to be the front desk manager. You want to be the owner. So if, when you go in a hotel, you don't generally see the owner behind the desk, unless it's a little place on the side of the highway maybe. But you know, the owner of the hotel is a fat cat, right, that owns a lot of hotels. So you want to be the owner, not the operator. And the way that you do that is through these virtual services. You pay a few pennies on the dollar, maybe 4 or 5% of what you bring in. Or you can hire a VA, which is a virtual assistant. And now there are so many VAs, that's all they do. They specialize in managing Airbnbs. And they could be in the Philippines, they could be in the States. You can pay them $4 an hour, you can pay them $12 an hour, but they can do all that for you. So the goal is to remove yourself from the day-to-day operations. So the only thing you're doing is finding more properties. And that's what I specialize in teaching. If you want to learn how to go get one place and put on Airbnb, you don't need me. But if you want to scale your business, that's what I teach, because it's all about scaling any kind of business you're in. You got to learn how to scale. And that's how you do it.
All right. So there's probably a lot more questions around like objections or things that people are thinking. Russ and I are so limited. If you've listened to the show, you know that we only make it so far. Our elevator only goes so far.
No, I got a good one for you that a lot of people ask about.
Okay. What is it?
A big one, and this is one that a lot of people won't touch in my space, is legality and restrictions with Airbnb. So a lot of people see all these articles and they see all this stuff coming at them like Airbnb is banned, Airbnb is not allowed. And to be honest, there are some places that are very difficult to do Airbnb. So we were seeing this with our students. I've got thousands of students in every metro area across the US and in 32 different countries right now. And what we found is some people were finding it to be challenging. So we started doing some research on this. We actually hired a research firm and researched the top 2,000 cities in the US, just particularly in the US. So any city over 30,000 people, we put it on a spreadsheet. And then we essentially gave them a grade. And we said, okay, how many of these property are these cities and towns allow home sharing and how many don't? And what we found is that 9 out of 10 cities and towns in the US allow home sharing and about 10% do not. And these 10% are going to be some of the larger metro areas like New York City proper, Atlanta, San Francisco, these places you just, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to do home sharing. But what we found is that a lot of students were still making money in those areas. And so I started reaching out to them. I'm like, how are you guys doing this? How do you have multiple properties in these areas? And the answer that I got back time and time again, like Jason, for example, in New York, he said, well, I just go across the river to New Jersey. That's where my listings are. They're in New Jersey. And somebody else who's in Atlanta, they're like, well, you can't do it in Atlanta, but you can do it in the 12 other towns and municipalities that are around Atlanta that make up the metro area with millions of people. And so we found that the just like any other kind of real estate, it there are zones where you can do it and there's zones that you can't. So you can't open a hair salon in a residential neighborhood and you can't live in an office building because it's not zoned that way. So the same thing, if you live somewhere where it's not allowed, which is 1 in 10 chance, you simply go where it is. You drive 20, 30 minutes outside that particular town. So as you cross the border, you go to a place where it's allowed. So that's what I encourage people to do. So, you know, Airbnb is a disruptor. There are cities that are trying to fight it, just like they tried to fight Uber, but it's here to stay. Home sharing is here to stay. And the opportunity is massive. So that's what I tell people.
All right. I've got a question that came to mind too. You talked earlier about studio apartments, one bedroom apartments. You even mentioned mm-hmm. two bedroom. Is there a specific size that makes sense for this and areas where you teach your students to stay away from?
No, there isn't. That's the funny thing. I did it a certain way, but I found other people, especially now that I've seen so many students like go through my program and do it their own way. A lot of people just do individual single family houses. I'm now doing single family houses that I actually own. So I have no problem with owning. It's a great way to build wealth. You don't have to own to do this, of course. So I'm doing single family homes now. Some people are doing it with very, very high end properties, which I just started into. And no, it all depends on the particular area that you're in. So if you're in a major, major city, you're probably going to be renting a flat or a condo or a townhouse. Whereas if you're in a very small town or a mid-sized town in middle America or not in a big city, you're probably going to do a single family home. So it's really completely dependent on where you live. And the other thing that is a big misconception is that Airbnb is something that works in big cities, but doesn't work in small towns. And that has also been debunked because I have students in every size town. I have a ton of students that are in towns of under 10,000 that are absolutely crushing it, which is shocking.
Wow.
But yeah, places that you wouldn't think are destinations, and they're not destinations, they're not tourist destinations, but people still need to stay somewhere. And so really anywhere there's a hotel, and there's hotels everywhere, there are people staying there short term. You just got to get some of those people to stay in your B&B.
All right. So Brian, this has been awesome content. I know that we're going to get deeper and deeper and deeper as we dive into this in the live Q&A within our community next week. But tell us a little bit, you've written a book on this subject matter, if I'm right, is How to Become Financially Free Using Airbnb.
Yep.
And then also you teach, you keep talking about teaching. I'm assuming that's both and the book as well as probably some sort of course or content. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I wrote a book that outlines and goes into specific details on how I did what I did with each of these properties. So for people that like details, like numbers, I go into all that. I show you what I'm making. I show you the property. I show you the cash flow and basically show you how I stacked all these and built a portfolio. So that's something that if you want to get, we'll just put the link below to get the book. And then also I do train people. So I do an 8-week training that basically takes you through from start to finish, where by the end of the first 4 weeks, you have one property. And by the end of 8 weeks, you've identified the second property. So it basically shows you everything that I learned over all these years of doing these things and showing you how to build this from scratch, even if you don't know anything about real estate or you don't know anything about Airbnb. And so now I've had, like I said, thousands of people have gone through this and gotten their first, second, third listings by going through the training.
Well, so Brian, you've also generously offered to do a webinar specifically for our audience. Mm-hmm. And so I want to give people specific instructions on how they can access that. You're going to need to go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/BNB. That's boy, Nancy, boy, right? BNB. Mm-hmm. So anybody that wants to come to that, give a couple of details on what they can expect from that webinar.
Yeah. So on that webinar, what I'm going to do is I'm going to basically take you through my story. I told you some of that just now, but we're going to take you through and show you how I got and negotiated each one of those deals. Where did I find them? How much did they make me? And basically, how did I structure it? And there's really only a few steps to doing this. I'm going to show you each one of those steps in the training. And then not only what I've done, because who cares what I've done? I want to show you what other people have done, people that have gone through my training and the results that they've gotten. So I've been very, very blessed to see people that are as young as teenagers. I've got a kid that's up in Chicago who is doing right around $400,000 a year in Chicago. He doesn't own any of the properties. I've got quite a few people in their 70s plus, 80s that are doing this that have never done real estate. One guy that didn't know how he's going to retire, and now he's got three properties making $3,500 a month. And he went through my course. So all kinds of ages, all kinds of socioeconomic backgrounds. Most people have no prior experience with real estate investing that have done this. So if you're a real estate investor, you got a head start. And so basically, I'm just going to show you all that, break it down for you, demonstrate how to do this. And then by the end, you can have a really solid idea of how it's done and if you want to do it where you live.
Man, super cool. Joey knows I've said this before. You know, I said I was going to retire at 35. My wife keeps reminding me of that. I also told my mom that I was going to own some sort of real estate and let her work it. So then she had a job. But like, this is like, I'm definitely sending her the link to sign up to this webinar because I think this is cool. I think this is a way that for those who maybe not be real estate inclined to find an avenue, especially if they have the gift of hospitality or just an interest level of that. So. And also you mentioned the book. We'll definitely throw that under that link. So it's wealthwaltwallstreet.com/BNB. We'll put the link to the webinar as well as the link to your book in there. Man, this has been amazing. I can't wait to dive deeper into this. I know there's a thousand questions Joey and I didn't ask, but I know your time's limited. We just appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me here. It's been awesome. And I hope people check out the training because it's really something that could change your life. I mean, it's a way to create cash flow in the next 30 days in your life. And it's a way to become a real estate investor without owning any real estate, which is very, very powerful. And that's what I'm about. It's not just about making money. It's about setting people free financially because they now have time. And when I was able to kick that job to the curb that I had and never go back and work about 4 to 5 hours a week now to manage my properties, it changed everything for me. And that's what I'm excited about to help your people do if they want to come check this out.
Dude, awesome. So awesome. Thank you so much, Brian, for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks.
If you've been listening to our podcast, you're like, man, I love what you guys are talking about. I want to build passive income through one of these five pillars that you're talking about. But how do I do it? Stallion, tell them. It is so easy.
So easy that we created the longest URL possible. So you may want to write this down. freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Go to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. And you can set up your call with one of us. We're excited to talk to you.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.